Hey everyone, I want to thank you for tuning in to podcast number 35 of the Jason Sloan Radio Show, part of by Bad Fish Outdoors Media. We've got a good buddy of mine, Mr. Jason Sakura, on the line this evening. How you doing?
What's up, Sloan? How you been?
Pretty good, pretty good. Always that coming down phase, if you want to call it that, after deer season really ends up being a vacation-like thing, but a lot of work. How was your deer season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was... As usual, it went pretty fast, but I did spend a lot of days in the tree, and I would say I probably spent 20-some days in a tree, and turned out to be a pretty good season. I shot a 10-pointer with my bow. That was pretty decent, and my son shot 8-pointer with his bow. I took another doe early in the year just to get some meat, and then we ended last week with a big 10 that and my son shot on opening morning of gun season. It was the one deer we wanted to kill on the property we were hunting, and he took them all 15 minutes, and he had it done.
Well, sometimes it pays to sit through that rain. It was raining by you, wasn't it, on the opener?
Yeah, we had some rain driving out, and then it was just kind of a mist as we walked in, and then it ended about the time season started, and it was all good. It was a good year.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's something I was going to ask you before we really get going on the efficient stuff, just an opinion that you might have on. What do you think about the new system of registering deer?
It's interesting you brought that up. You know, it's kind of a give and take. I think it's just going to take some time for people in Wisconsin to get used to it, and hopefully everybody is reliable, if you want to say, and calling all their deer in that they harvest. But at the same time, I'm sure there's plenty of deer being harvested that aren't being registered, you know, due to the fact that we have the new tagging system. So hard to really say. You know, I'm in favor for it. I'm sure some businesses aren't, because, you know, people don't have to go in and register that deer somewhere physically. So it's kind of a give and take, but I myself, I'm in favor for it.
Yeah, the one thing I think they kind of lost with this, I mean, they're losing a little bit of the traditional. I talked about this with another guy on their podcast. I'm not going to burn a lot of time on it, but one of the things I had thought was, you know, they kind of lose a little bit of the traditional stuff, but a tradition should never hold you back from making an advancement in some way. But the other thing I think is that they're really losing a lot of data collection opportunities as far as some of the age studies they would do. And now with the CWD, they had that. I mean, we were set up in this state to really have an easy way for the DNR to get a lot of data. And now that's gone. But it certainly is convenient, I will say that. And, yeah, I hope that people – the one thing I was kind of hoping they would have would be – some way to keep or to make you have to validate a tag in the field.
Sure. No, I agree. It's there's still some loopholes in the system that, you know, probably going to have to be figured out in the next year or two. But yeah, I mean, you pick up your deer, you throw it in the truck, and you drive home, and there's no tag. You know, there's nothing that you put on the deer. You just called in and you're done. But yeah, I'll get back to, like, the CWD thing. Yeah, that's, I don't know. You know, CWD, you know, how bad is it? Is it really affecting the Wisconsin deer herd? Yeah, probably a little bit, but there's a lot of other factors that are affecting our deer herd. That would be a whole other podcast.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we said about those deer or the deer managers too, the guys that work on the deer for the DNR. I don't envy those guys at all, as far as they can't ever do anything right in the view of the public. And they obviously care very deeply about it, and they work very hard. And boy, those guys got a tough job. But anyway, let's get back to some efficient stuff. So how's your season on the NWT trail wrap up for you with you and your team?
Yeah, you know, it's fishing. It's fishing. It's always up and down. You're going to have your swings when you're doing well. You're going to have some bad years. And that was probably one of my worst years I've had in a long time as far as myself. Getting back to the team thing before we get too far, just so people are aware of it. I mean, it's pretty hard to fish by yourself in the National Walleye Tour and cover as much water as you need to. And, you know, we're fishing some pretty big bodies of water. So I myself fish with Mark Quartz and Corey Springle and Kevin McCoy. And, you know, basically we share expenses. We travel together. Share information on covering water before a tournament. And then, but once the tournament comes, you know, it's, I'm basically fishing against my teammates. But, with that being said, as a team, we had a pretty good year. We gel together pretty well and, we're able to cover the water effectively. And, Mark Quartz ended up winning the Prairie du Chien tournament we had down in, Pools. 9, 10, and 11 this year, which was one tournament I thought we were going to win going into the season, and as luck would have it, we won it. Lake Erie, we did pretty well as a team, a couple guys in the top, and overall, we did well. I myself, you know, like I said, had probably one of my worst years, and it wasn't a bad year. We finished in the 20s in points, but it was a year of great day, bad day, great day, bad day, great day, bad day. And that's the way the whole year went for me. It was, you just, I couldn't put 2 days together to finish well. And that's what happens. It's, can't blame it on mechanical failures. Can't blame it on anything but myself. And that's the way it goes though. You know, I talked to Mark today and this season's going to be here before we know it, even though it's the beginning of winter time. We're already prepping for spring and we'll get them this year. We'll figure them out again, as always, and move forward.
All right. Now, let's see, when did you start doing tournaments on the scale that you're doing them now?
Well, I mean, if we want to go all the way back, I started tournament fishing in 1995. It was my first year in an organized tournament circuit. That was as an amateur. So that's really when I got my start. I got into the team circuits right after that in the late 90s, and then I jumped into a pro-am circuit, which was the RCL, in the year 2000. So I've been fishing the RCL, and then I jumped into the, which has turned into the FLW. And when the FLW went away in 2012, the National Walleye Tour started, and been fishing that ever since. So I've been tournament fishing since 1995, but really been since I made the decision to jump behind a steering wheel to be on the pro side since the year 2000, if you want to say.
Gotcha. And then along the way, you also did some guiding too as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did my fair share of guiding in central Wisconsin and did quite a bit of that. I'm not doing much of that anymore, just due to other obligations and everything else going on with kids and family and all the fun stuff that goes through that. I don't do a lot of guiding anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, if you had to pick, say, one key or a couple of keys, what does it take to stay competitive on that tournament trail year after year? Because you always do seem to be one of the guys that the name is coming up in a lot of the tournaments. You know, you're always in it anyway. What would you say is a key or two to maintaining that?
Looking back at the years when I struggled way back in the 90s, that's when I kind of finally figured it out where, you know, what do I got to do to be consistent? That's the whole thing. Go out, catch 5 walleyes every day. And it was actually my wife that convinced me to keep tournament fishing because I was going to give it up at one point in time and just kind of do some guiding and whatever. And she said, no, you got a brain for it. You know what you're doing. You got a passion and, you know, just keep rolling with it. So it was pretty much at that point when I said, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it 110% and really figure out how to consistently catch walleyes. So, you know, one of the things I did early on was just, even if I struggled and had a bad day, I used it as a learning experience, you know, okay, now I know areas that aren't good or know presentations that aren't working at this time of year, in this body of water, you know, stuff like that. But a lot of times what I did was just stick around during tournament weigh-ins, after weigh-ins, after tournaments, and just listen. You know, I'm not the guy that's going to go talk your ear off. I'm the listening kind of guy. So, you know, if you're having a conversation with your buddies off to the side about the day or the weekend or the tournament or whatever, you know, I'm probably listening, even though you don't know it. I want to know how you guys caught them. I want to know, you know, how you finished in the top. And, you know, that's kind of what I started to do, was just learn from people. And if they wanted to talk, I would listen and I would ask a few questions. And if they were willing to tell me, that was even better. So, you know, just little things like that. And then the second thing I really started to do was just really understand the areas you're fishing and the fish itself. You know, for example, if you're in a community hole and you're fishing with 30 other boats, you know, how are you going to be better than the other 29? And a friend of mine told me this years ago, and he said, well, you just got to know that spot better than everybody else. So that's kind of the approach I took, was that I spend more time on my electronics than I do actually fishing, especially in practice. I want to learn that area, learn what's down there exactly. So I know the key spot on the spot, and I know how these fish want that presentation, even though it's in a community hole, you know. And that's kind of the approach I take all the time going into a tournament is, you know, no matter if I'm fishing by myself in an area or if I'm with a group of 30 boats, I want to know that spot better than anybody. So it's pretty simple when you really think about it, but it's just that approach and that time on the water and using it to your advantage.
Awesome. And what would you say is your average, because a lot of people don't know about what you guys go through on the trail, but how long, like prior to the tournament, are you showing up for pre-fishing? Mm-hmm.
You know what I've found over the years is that the longer I practice is usually the worse you end up. and it's really, to answer your question first and foremost, we spend about 4 days on the water prior to a tournament, maybe five. I really don't like to go any farther than that. And the reason being is you're usually finding fish. Let's say I'm there for a week. I'm finding fish 2 and 3 days into practice. Well, now I'm on the tail end of the pattern, and I want to be on the leading end of the pattern. So those fish I found early in practice are already dwindling by the time the tournament comes. So that's the whole key, is to ideally you find your best area and your best fish the day before a tournament, and everything is fresh, and you're on a good pattern going ahead. You're not on a failing pattern fading away. You know, so that's why we don't practice as long as, man, some people really put in some weeks. And yeah, I guess that would be cool if you're new to a body of water and you've never been there and you need that time, you know, to drive around and look and find out what's going on. But after 20 years, we've been to most of these places before and got a pretty good idea of how these systems lay out. And then it's just a matter of finding the freshest pattern that's coming and not going. So that's kind of the approach we take.
And if we were going to go to, let's say if you just had to pick, I mean, obviously with the amount of years that you've been doing this for, if you had to just, maybe name some of the technological advancements that have really changed the game. Obviously, you could explain some of the new stuff with the like hummingbirds, that and then other stuff on top of that that have really changed how you go about what you do.
Yeah, you know, looking back 20 years ago, there was a lot of secrets out there. There was there was technology that not everybody had, you know. I was one of the first dozen guys that could use a GPS with contour lines, cartography. So we could go find these little humps out in the middle of Lake Erie or Lake Michigan or Lake Saginaw or anywhere. And not everybody had that use. Well, now everybody can basically buy technology. It's available to us. So you could be 20 years old, you know, fresh into the tournament world, and that stuff is available to you. So you can just find that little spot that, you know, we found 25 years ago. So how are you going to separate yourself from everybody else? Because everybody can cast, everybody can troll, everybody can jig. Some are a little better than others. So take that, you know, turn that into one of the things. But at the same time, how are you going to separate yourself from everybody else and keep consistently finishing better? And I'll say that electronics is 95% of it. That's the reason I consider myself a little bit better than most. I've been more consistent over the years. And what I like to do is, you know, just going back to what I said a little while ago, is you got to know that spot better than the next guy. So I spend a lot of time with sight imaging. That is in the last 20 years, the most advanced technology available to us. 100%, hands down, no questions asked. With sight imaging, you can learn stuff so fast and not even have a doubt in your mind of what it looks like. You know, just take, for example, last year. We were, not last season, but I would say the year before, we were on Sturgeon Bay in a tournament in July, which is a different month for us out there. We usually don't fish there that time of year, but actually it was the end of June. I'll take that back. It was end of June, 1st of July. And that was when the shiver minnow jigging style bite was just kind of really taken off. And the key was to, you know, find the bigger boulders on some of that shoreline structure. Well, there's a lot of shoreline on Green Bay, you know. You got the East Shore and the West Shore, and you can go for days and days and days and days. And that's really what we did. I mean, once we figured out we could catch fish on shiver minnows or swim baits or anything that you could cast, we had to find the best areas and eliminate the bad water and find the best water. I literally took about 4 days and I fished about a 30-mile stretch of the west shore of Green Bay, and I would idle around and literally idle for miles with sight imaging. What I'm looking for is the rock piles that have the big boulders. And if you had big boulders on a point of those rock piles, well, that was the jackpot. I mean, that was the money spot. But basically just looking for big boulders, and most of them I wouldn't even fish, because why would I want to go catch the fish I need, you know, a day later? I know the fish are going to be there. That's the right structure. I'm seeing it with sight imaging, picture like image. There's no question. So we just put a waypoint on them and keep motoring along. And well, eventually after 3-4 days of looking around, once in a while make a few casts, you know, out of the 30 miles of shoreline, we'd have about 8, 9, maybe 10 good spots. But, you know, as that tournament turned out, I ended up third. My teammate won it. And another guy in the top 15 and another one in the top 20. So, you know, that's sight imaging. That's technology. That's how you use it and trust in it. And like I said, that is the most advanced technology we've had in the last 20 years. Where are they going to go from now? I don't know. Really, there's so much good stuff out there, man.
It's always those hard things believe. Like you always wonder, what can they come up with next? Like after they came up with the mapping units, the GPS mm-hmm. contour lines, that was mm-hmm. affordable. It's like, wow, where are they going to go next? But that sight imaging is interesting. You're talking about that, with there not being any secrets out there. So there are a lot of the late summer up here, where I am in northern Wisconsin, mm-hmm. one of the guide's keys was fishing cribs, and now, you know, these cribs that guys knew about that nobody else did, well, now you take a run around the lake, you find every crib on the lake. It's really advanced that, or, I mean, you could look at it however you want, if it's good or bad with that, but it really the side imaging is just insanity as far as, you know, something new with that. Mm-hmm. But
it's all good. You know.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It's all good. People want to go out and catch fish. They want to go waste 2 days on the water and get skunked, you know. With this stuff now, I mean, there's no reason you should not catch fish. So.
Right. And, I mean, like you're saying with, you know, it's just a means. I can sit there this fall. I had times, I don't know if you saw any of the photos I'd posted, but of the locator, we were seeing so many fish. It looked like every fish in the lake was in these certain areas, and we couldn't get a bite. So, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to limit out and fill coolers with fish just because you can have, you know, some kind of nice piece of electronics on your boat. Doesn't mean that you're going to fill up on that. But one thing I want to ask you about, you know, it's interesting having you on because you've had the experience on the tournament trail on all these different fisheries, and I know it's going to be a tough one because they're so diverse, but how would you say the fisheries have changed in 20 years? And I know that's kind of a, you know, because you're all the way from North Dakota to Ohio, but generally speaking, how are the fisheries for walleyes looking?
You know, honestly, I think the fisheries are as good as I've seen it in a long time. I mean, going back to when I started, granted I didn't know as much as I do now, but the fishing we've had the last 10 years, 5 to 10 years, up till now, has been fantastic. I mean, I don't even go to Canada anymore. I mean, there's so many good places to fish in the U.S. I don't need to go to Canada anymore. And granted, it's nice up there and you catch a lot of walleyes and it's pretty easy, but man, I think fisheries and the DNR are doing a pretty good job. You know, even Wisconsin is doing some steps to, you know, make it better up in northern Wisconsin, as you know. Got some pretty good future ahead of us. There's some pretty good bodies of water. We got some walleyes in them right now. That I have not seen in a long time. So, yeah, I think it's nothing but going to be good.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've seen. I mean, as far as top-end size, too, I don't remember seeing, going back, which is keeping up as a kid, reading magazines and then watching the shows, all that stuff. Obviously not traveling to a lot of these other places, but, boy, it seems now that top-end size, boy, you really see, I mean, you've always got your Erie, but outside of that, even, you're seeing top-end size, and I think that's got a lot to do with the new mentality of not keeping the big fish and how we've come along for that. There's enough for the 17-inchers to take home and eat, and then they're letting those anything over. You know, most of the guys, if they're out fishing for sport to keep some fish, they're not keeping anything over 18, 20 inches.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, the mentality has changed over the years. You know, people are better fishermen than they have been due to technology and time on the water, but, you know, with that being said, I think there's enough educated people out there that know you don't need to keep all the big ones and just keep a few for eating if you want and release the rest. And yeah, it's good, man. Like you said, from Ohio to North Dakota and everywhere in between, I've been in the last 20 years. And, you know, I think the heydays are upon us. They're here.
I agree 100% with you. I mean, they're starting to bring the northern Wisconsin back a little bit. I think we've got an issue with habitat change, with the water habitat, with the spawning, that I don't know if they can ever fix that, but they're really making efforts to make this a lot nicer up here as far as the walleyes go, and hopefully that pans out. It's going in the right direction. And then another thing I want to ask you, everybody thinks that, all that you do for a living is just go fishing. What part of the tournament trail on that part is job, and I'm sure this varies between guys, but it's a job, you're there to work, and you're there fishing, having a good time. What's that breakdown for you?
Right. Yeah, I've been fishing full time since 2007. That's when I quit my job at Gander Mountain and pursued a career in it full time. But, you know, going into it back then, when you quit your job and you got to make a living at it, you know, that's a pretty hard decision to make. Plus, you know, you're your own boss now, and you don't have a paycheck coming in every 2 weeks like you used to. So with that being said, you've got to control everything. And I kind of learned as I went, you know, there's no book I can read to figure that out. And, you know, you do call a few guys that are full-time fishermen and try and get their opinion on things. And, you know, there's only about a dozen of us doing it for a living on the walleye tour. So it's not exactly the easiest thing in the world. Otherwise, everybody would be doing it. But anyway, you know, to answer your question about that, I don't get to fun fish a lot. You know, I probably get out about 8-10 times a year just fun fishing, you know, taking my kids or whatever and go fishing. But, you know, as far as the tournament world goes, it's business. Yeah, we have fun when we're doing it. We try and, you know, crack a joke here and there and laugh and, you know, have fun while we're doing it. But at the same time, you know, we have to catch fish to pay the bills. So it's a job every day, you know, and it's 4 and 5 footers at 7 in the morning, and it's just cold and it's crappy, and you want to look out the window and sleep in. Well, you can't, you know, you got to go out fishing. So that's some of the bad part of it. But at the same time, you got to look at it and say, you're fishing for a living, you know, there's a lot of people that want to do this. So you get your butt going and you get out there and you figure it out. So there's a lot of commitments from sponsors. It's a never-ending job as far as that goes. You know, I basically work 7 days a week at it. But you never know what kind of hours you're going to be working. You know, I might be able to go check Gerald cameras and for a couple hours in the middle of the day, but then I get back and I got 3 emails waiting, and I got to fill out some reports, and then I got to do this thing for this conference coming up, and then I got to book a seminar for this winter. And so it just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. It's always changing. So you just don't know what one day is going to bring to the next. And that's kind of the fun part about my job, is you never know what's next. You know, so that's really it in a nutshell. It's fun. Especially the tournament part of it. I love that part of it. And I love the you know, the takeoffs in the morning, and I love that part when you actually take off and then you're on your own. That to me is my world. That's what I like to be. You know, I'm not big on the whole thing with big crowds and all that kind of stuff. And you know, the rustle and bustle of the morning when everybody's parking trucks and trying, I don't like that part. But once we take off and you're on your own, I love it. You know, that's my 8 hours. I'm going to get it done, and I'll see you at 3. So that's the part I enjoy.
I think you had told me one time several years ago that the tournament part of your season, you know, or the short part of the season, but the tournament part of the season was your enjoyable part. And I mean, you said you enjoyed your job. Top to bottom, but the tournament season was the enjoyable part, and then the off season was the work part. You know, not that you're working working during tournaments, but that you know, that the off season, a lot of people don't know, is that's when your appearances for sponsors and blah blah, all that stuff.
Right, and people need to realize that when you fish for a living, the sponsors, yeah, they want you out there fishing the tournaments and doing all that stuff, but they really want you doing the stuff off the water. That's what they care about. It's the promoting of the products and making sure that we're selling stuff and getting the word out on the street about things and showing them what we do and how we use them. And, you know, that's what they care about. You know, if you win a tournament, yeah, that's great. They enjoy that part too. But if you take 30th, they're just as happy with that as well. You know, as long as you're out there doing your job, it's the off the water things that take up most of my time. Yep.
Right. Okay. Let's go into a quick fire here, just for a little bit. The 2018 mm-hmm. schedule. Give me your thoughts. Red Wing in early May. What's your thoughts?
Sure. Red Wing in early May is probably the best opening tournament we could have that time of year in May. On the river, providing we don't have high water, is going to be fantastic. I won two tournaments there in May. I've won the MWC Championship the first week of May, and then I won an FLW qualifier there the first week of May. And it's a big fish time, and it's going to be awesome. I just love fishing rivers. Grew up on the Wisconsin River here, so it's kind of the same thing over there, and that's going to be awesome.
Okay, let's go. Saginaw Bay, June 14th.
Mm-hmm. That's a new one. I haven't been to Saginaw in probably 5 or 6 years. I fished an AIM tournament there. 2009, I think it was, maybe 10, somewhere right in there. That system has changed a lot in the last 10 to 15 years. I remember a tournament there in 2001, Saginaw Bay. We ran 40 miles out to the middle of nowhere, fished suspended walleyes. They were big. Didn't get a lot of bites, but they were big. Those fish are no longer there, according to what I've read and talked to and heard and, you know, just looking at the internet and talking to people. A lot of smaller fish now and not as many big fish. There's quite a few fish in the lower bay, so that's good. We won't have to travel as far to find fish, but, you know, you're not going to get those 7-pound average like we used to get. If you get a 5-pound average now, you're doing pretty darn good. So it's going to be fun. You're going to catch a lot of fish there that time of year. You're just not going to have the big, big ones.
Yeah, that's something about that. Well, you know, that area, generally from what, I mean, I've never really fished up there. I mean, I fished a few times, but mm-hmm. that always seemed like more of a fall destination. What's the difference up there between fall and middle of June?
It's just location.
Right.
You know, those fish are, the time of year we're going there, they're going to be close to us. So, you know, there's going to be guys driving a long ways to try and go from a 5-pound average down south to a 6, 6.5-pound average a long ways away. But
right.
That's the gamble you're going to have to take if you're going to want to win too. And, you know, but Saginaw Bay is a beast, man. She gets rough and it's basically Green Bay times two is what I call it. It's about the same distance north to south, but it's twice as wide. So she gets ugly. I've lost some equipment out there over the years.
All right. Let's go Devil's Lake, July 26th. Man, I love the Western Reservoirs. I love being out in those neighborhoods, those old prairie towns. There's mm-hmm. something, I mean, for me personally, and I'm not even fishing. I mean, we do a little short fishing when I'm covering tournaments. But,
mm-hmm.
man, I love being in those towns. What's your take on that one?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it awesome out there? I mean, like last year we were on Sakakawea out in Garrison, North Dakota. My God, you drive down the reservoir by boat for, you know, for 20 miles, and you wouldn't see anything but beautiful landscape. And, oh, my God, no houses, you know, no boats. It's like a dream world. And you know, Devil's Lake is always good. You know, that time of year is going to be a new time of year for us, kind of midsummerish. So,
right.
You know, that's good. It's going to make us change how we do things a little bit. We've been there in the spring, early summer when the fish are shallow and easy, and then we've been there later in the fall when the fish are, you know, relatively deep, and now we're there kind of in the middle. So that's going to change a few things, but that's fun. Makes pre-fishing more exciting. You get to look at some new water, new techniques, that kind of thing. And Devil's Lake, you know, it just never changes. It always changes. It's fluctuating in water levels all the time. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. It's a fun pre-fish because you're always going to be catching something, and you know, you're just trying to find the biggest ones. That's That's the whole key. Looking forward to that one, too.
And, when you're out on spots like that, say, and you're pre-fishing, I was probably looking at you guys, and I was like, man, these guys are catching some, you know, decent catfish and some decent northerns. Man, I'd be filleting those things. But do you ever keep fish, like the pre-fishing that you might take home with you, or is it just all a business, throw them back and get back to the next walleye?
Yeah, pretty much. Throw them back and go to the next one. There's a few occasions over the years. Yeah, okay, we'll keep a few. You know, it's funny because I don't even have a fish in the freezer right now. And there's plenty of opportunity last summer to keep some pretty good, you know, 17-inch walleyes to eat. But no, it was more just treat it as a job and a business and throw them back and go on to the next one. But we do here and there. We do have fun once in a while and keep a few walleyes, but no, we throw most of them back.
Yeah, that time we filmed that show with Geike, with you down on the river, down there by Point, and you had those bags of incidental caught perch. And I was like, geez, I wish I had bags of incidental caught perch.
Yeah. No, yeah, those northerns you're talking about on Devil's Lake too, yeah. We catch them by the hundreds in certain areas. And yeah, they taste good. I love northerns, but yeah, I don't have time for them when I'm there practicing to just throw them back.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure you don't want to be taking Y bones out of pike at, you know, at 9 o'clock at night.
No.
It could be.
No.
The other things. And then, while we're on the reservoir subject out there, why don't they do Fort, or about Montana do a Fort Peck anymore? It hasn't been one there in a while. Right. Is it too far, or
yeah,
what's the deal?
Yeah, that's kind of the problem. Is it's too far, and we're not going to draw the numbers of anglers that we need to keep the sponsors
right.
happy. You know, all the eastern guys, they're not going to drive, you know, 2.5 days to get to a tournament. So you're going to lose quite a few people. And it, granted, the fishing is fantastic. You know, giant walleyes in there. And, you know, like we said before, nobody around, no houses. You can drive for miles. Nobody's fishing. And, but on the same hand, you know, there's nobody out there. There's, you know, not a lot of places to stay. There's not a lot of motels
right.
close by. You're driving a lot of dirt roads. And, you know, it's just not a good venue for a tournament. But if you want to go fishing, you know, now you're talking, that's a great place to go. Fantastic.
Yeah, I always thought that was kind of the crown jewel out there. And that is one of the reasons it is that. I lived in Montana for a lot of years, and, boy, that's just, it's insanity the how good that fishery is. And the fact that it's so remote, even for out there, it's remote and does not get the pressure. I forget, it's 100 miles long, and I believe it's
right.
Whatever, 180,000 acres at full pool, you know, and the smallmouth to the catfish to the salmon, to the pike, to the walleye, it's just it's as good as anywhere in Canada for the most part.
Right.
But yeah, you just don't see the people out there. And that was what I figured, that it's not a good venue for that. And then for the last one, one of my favorites, Lake of the Woods, early September.
Yeah, Lake of the Woods, that's our championship for next year. It's going to be fun. It's going to be challenging. It's probably going to be rough. There's nowhere to hide out there. So I'm thinking where we're taking off from on a Baudette, we're going to be driving quite a ways to the winning fish. And we're going to be dealing with a slot. You know, that's always an issue with the tournament is you can only catch certain size fish and so many of them. And kind of brings a luck factor into a tournament. You know, I don't want to say that, you know, I won a championship that was a slot tournament on Lake Oahe, and you still have to do your homework, you know, to find your overs and then to find your underfish. So you're going to have to be a good fisherman to be on top there at the end. But that's going to be interesting, to say the least. I haven't been there personally since my honeymoon and 1994. So it's going to be new water to me. I do know a lot about it. You know, I watch the videos and I listen and I know how people catch fish there. It's just a matter of finding them. I got a few things that I've been thinking of the last few months on what I'm going to do there. And if my hunch is right, I think it's going to work really well. So we'll see how that plays out. But once again, new body of water. And when we go there for practice, I love that scenario because, you know, you don't have no set rules. You know, you go do your thing, and it's a new body of water, maybe with a new look that I might bring to it or somebody else on my team, and away we go. You know, that's the thing. If you're fishing the same bodies of water year after year after year, you're always doing the same thing. You know, it's the same presentation, same.
Right.
And sometimes you get stuck on that, you know, and some new guy shows up and boom, he tries something that you didn't even think about, and he ends up winning. Well, that's the mentality of a new body of water. You don't have any bad habits, and you're not stuck on what worked before. And that's what I like about it. You can just drive and go and find them and catch them the way you want. And hopefully your way is the best way at the end of the week, and you go home with a trophy. That's the plan.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I know some guys here talking about going out there without a preconceived notion. I know guides back here, very successful guides, that do not keep a logbook, where they're like, if I'm going to Lake Tomahawk on July 16th to fish for the muskies, obviously they've got stuff in the back of their mind, but they're like, I don't want to know what wind speed and wind direction and all these. I don't want to know the last or what happened last time I was here on this date. I want to go out there and be fresh as much as you can on a lake you fish all the time. But
I totally understand that. I want to bring up what I've done the last 20-some years. I used to do that. I used to keep every log, waypoints, and, you know, I mean, you name it. I would keep books of them, and they're still sitting here in my office. And after keeping records for about 5-6 years, I got to realize that I've never used any of that information that I had written down. I would rely on it. I'd go back to it and look at it and say, okay, yeah, I should be able to go here and do this under this condition. And I would go try it, and it wouldn't work. So eventually, I basically scrapped that whole idea of logbooks, keeping records. I want a fresh mind going in. I don't even keep waypoints from year to year. I keep them on my computer.
Right.
But I don't want my graph littered with 1,000 waypoints going into an event, you know, from the years before. The reason being is you're going to get married to those waypoints, and you're not going to want to venture away from them too far.
Right.
And that's how you get stuck in a rut. Things don't work. And I've talked to a lot of bass guys that, very popular bass guys and guys that have done very well, and they got the same ideas. You know, you want to go into a tournament fresh, clean screen on your GPS, and away you go. And go make your own fresh waypoints. Not, you don't want to rely on the old stuff. Granted, if there's a rock pile somewhere, yeah, I'm going to have a waypoint.
Exactly.
So I know where it is.
But,
you know, that's about it. I'm not going to get married to the waypoints, is our saying. So.
Yeah, and I can see, you know, on the logbooks to be kind of cool to pass down to your sons at some son at some point. It's just kind of cool seeing a journal of your stuff. That's kind of neat. But yeah, far as using it to go out on the water, yeah, that's the same thing that these guys are saying up here, which kind of surprised me at the time. I'm like, yeah, you want to know when there's a storm coming in on this day. Boy, I hammered them here, and nope, don't want to know it. Just go out.
Right. Be fresh. Open mind. Just go. Fish your instinct. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep. That's one thing I've learned.
Right. So you've been doing more of the largemouth thing with your son now, with some of that. So obviously that's enjoyable for you. But, you know, it's like it seems like the walleye guy, to find any, you know, of a walleye pro, all that, he enjoys his deer hunting. And whatever is ice fishing or bass fishing, you know, you find something else because the walleyes end up being a job.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Are you thinking of doing any tournaments for bass in the future?
I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that you do that open tournament down in Sturgeon Bay, which is, boy, is that a fun weekend. I love covering that down there. That's a fun one, obviously, for everybody. You know, I got Parsons and his kid are fishing together. You can tell that's a fun deal.
That's our fun week. You know, that's when we can kind of relax and just go have fun catching smallmouths. It'd be great to win it, and we're definitely trying to win it, but at the same time, it's our time together, and we just have fun. But, you know, going back to maybe fishing some bass tournaments or doing some of that stuff, you know, I'm at the age now, I'm 47, and it's realistically, it's pretty late for me to jump into that ball game, you know, where I'd go fish
right.
the bass opens or something like that, because it's going to, there's a learning curve to that stuff, you know, it's going to take 3 or 4 years just to get to know some of these bodies of water where these guys have already been on them for years. You know, it's going to take me a while, and I just don't have that luxury or time to go do that. But, you know, that's where my kid comes in. He's 18 now, and he's out of high school and into college and fishing wide open, and, you know, he's the bass guy. And so, you know, it's fun just to kind of help him along the way and kind of show him what this business is all about. He's taking a marketing program right now and, you know, trying to steer him in the right directions. You know, I didn't have that luxury growing up. I just kind of learned it as I went, but, you know, just want to help him along. But at the same time, you know, I tell all these young guys, because I'm a coach here down at the Stevens Point High School at Spash, and I coach the bass team there. And, you know, some of these kids, they want to talk about sponsors when they're 16 years old. And the first thing I tell them is, that's the last thing on your mind. It should be the last thing you want to talk about. I said, all you guys, we need to go out and we need to figure out how to catch fish and be the best we can be at it. Then everything else will follow. You don't need to go get a 50% off of a rod or any, you know, that's, heck, just go out and fish, you know, learn like you're supposed to, and the sponsors will come. So that's kind of the mentality I'm teaching these guys. And it's fun, you know, because they're young and I'm getting old, and they're keeping me young just by being around them and teaching them what's going on.
Yeah, that's always one of the jokes I use is that, you know, I get free hot sauce at Taco Bell, so I'm technically on their pro staff.
Good point.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and I know we talked about, you know, that beating and taking tournaments. As far as that, you know, I mean, you're a young man still, but I mean, how's your body react to crash? I mean, there's some little tournaments. My back hurts like watching you guys take off. Mm-hmm. So how are you holding up?
I'm doing pretty good, actually, physically. I had a back issue for about 3 years straight. That was quite a while ago, probably 7, 8 years ago. Got rid of that through some exercise and some stretching and all that stuff. Didn't even have to have surgery. I'm fine now. I can pretty much do whatever I need to do. Yeah, it hurts to get out of bed, but once you get moving, it's fine. No, I don't see myself slowing down that way physically anytime soon. But, boy, I tell you what, you know, not to just throw some plugs in there, but I use those Airwave pedestals in my boat, and I've used them for 3 years. Man, is that nice on the back. You know, you pound for 30 miles across Lake Erie, and not one time when you hit a wave, you say, ow, you know, and that's just because of those pedestals on your seats and just giving you enough cushion there to absorb that shock, you know. That's how I originally got my back pains, was taking long rides with no help in my suspension, you know. It was just boom,
yep,
right to the neck and back, and oh, instant headache, and then, you know, the next day you're screwed. And so, yeah, that's a lifesaver, having those air ride seats in my boat.
Yeah, that stuck. I mean, I've racked myself going across the Mille Lacs muskie fishing back in the day where it was like racking you so bad you could, it was like racking your the balls up. It was so bad. I mean, I'm not trying to be obscene or anything. But, I mean, it would hit you so hard that it was crazy. And this was in aluminum at the time, too, which even makes it worse. And then you see, like, Gary Parsons with his neck issues, these guys that have been, like, crashing these waves for 30 years or 40 years, whatever the hell it's been. So, and then those the musky guys, too, using the bow mounts a lot. So they're up on their knees, and all of their knees are shot from, you know, doing that in big water. But just everybody's got, we start breaking down. But, yeah, so after, I mean, you get out of the tournament thing, you're probably not going to do it forever, but what's your, you know, game plan after you get done with tournaments?
Ideally, I'm going to do this probably until I'm, well, probably another 5 to 10 years, maybe 10 years at the most. That'll put me at 57. But ideally, I want to be a rep in the industry somewhere. You know, repping one of these companies that I've been working for a long time now, and just kind of help them out and do that to finish up my career. You know, be it any either a boat company or a reel or rod or lures or whoever. You know, just kind of finish up the industry there, and then hopefully have enough money to retire, and then watch my kids finish up fishing and cheering them on from the stands and not from the water. So,
yeah, that's it's always the goal to do that kind of thing for sure. And why don't you go over some of the companies that have helped you out along the way that you're working for and representing?
Sure. I mean, I've had quite a few sponsors for a lot of years, the same sponsors, and I do get asked a lot, you know, how do you get them, how do you do it? Every sponsor that I've picked up along the years has been a different story, you know, from just meeting them randomly somewhere. Some of them I've actually cold called and made the contact. Some of them where I was referred to by another person. They're all different stories, but ultimately, we all end up in the same place and have a relationship with some companies. And you know, Ranger is the first one I've been with since 2000. That's when I ordered my first Ranger boat, and I've ordered one every year since. Great company to be with, great people, obviously. They're family to me. I'm going down there. I don't know when this will air, but you know, I'll go down there every year for their product knowledge and do some training with them and get familiar with the new products for next year and do that all the time. And then have a little.
Well, I have to interrupt you quick on the Ranger. I have to give a quick thing. If you're going down to talk to them, tell them to bring back that 680 tiller.
Yeah, you had one and I had one. I still miss that boat. That was my first Ranger that I bought, you know, by myself with
my
sponsorship. Yeah, I mean, that was a dream boat just for fishing. I mean, geez. But I will. I'll put in the word. I'll say Jason Sloan says we need to make a 680 tiller again.
That may carry some weight, or maybe just don't drop my name.
Okay.
But and just say it once back. However you feel it's going. But anyway.
I'll make it work. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I've been with Evinrude since 1999. That was the first year I was with them guys. And, they were the ones that actually, they were the reason I quit my job to pursue this career full time. And, you know, without them, I don't fish full time, and just a great company to work with. And, you know, now they've got the new GTU out the last 3 years now, and it's just been fantastic, at least. You know, there's advancements in the outboard industry that are pretty cool. So I love running them, and the Humminbird, Minn Kota, Talon products. We've talked about them before. Man, where are they going to go next, right? I mean, now we've got the Ultrex trolling motor. It's got spot lock. It's got cable drive and electric drive at the same time. It does everything but go up and down into the boat, you know. So it's crazy how good that stuff is, electronics and everything. And I've got so many new sponsors too that I've got coming in this year. And well, we're gonna go back to some that I've had for a long time. I've been with Berkley forever. Berkley is part of Pure Fishing, who owns Abu Garcia, Fluger Reels, Fenwick Rods, and a bunch of other companies as well. But I represent Fluger Reels and Fenwick Rods. I represent Berkley in both their soft baits, their hard baits, and the line, and also the hooks. They come out with the Fusion 19 hooks a few years ago,
yep.
Which if you haven't seen those yet, they're pretty stellar. Pretty sticky, I'm just saying.
Right.
Use them a lot on crawler harnesses, and yeah, you just don't lose the fish like you used to with those. But they've been around forever. Just got done talking to them guys today, actually. We're all good for next season with those guys. And picked up a new sponsor here this past year at the ICAST show. Just got done finalizing the deal with Lucas Oil. So I'll be representing them guys again for the first time here next year.
Nice.
Looking forward to that relationship. It's always fun to start a new one and see what kind of direction they want to go. My boat wrap sponsor since 2012 has been Bone Collector and Hardcore Decoys, which is actually owned by the same guys, and kind of a dual sponsorship role there. But they've been great to me. Supporting me since 2012 when I approached him with a sponsorship program, and they accepted it, and it's been great ever since. Offshore Tackle, I don't even know how long I've been with them guys, for quite a while, dealing with them. And got Hidden Bay Graphics is one of the newer ones I've picked up here last year, which is a... They do all my jerseys. They do, they're based out of Hayward, Wisconsin. They do a lot more sublim jerseys than people even realize. A lot of stuff that they don't, I guess they do aftermarket for a lot of companies. But great people to work with, very affordable, quick turnaround times. You can get jerseys relatively fast and quite a bit cheaper. Great products. Had all my high school guys get jerseys last year. I had a team from BC Evers High School get their jerseys there. Everybody's happy with them. And that's Hidden Bay Graphics out of Hayward. They're a great company to work with. But, and then Amphibia sunglasses, Hydrowave, the list goes on and on. It's always fun to work with sponsors and try and keep them all happy and keep moving forward.
Right. That's great. You know, what's going on in that Minn Kota thing, you know, with that, we went to Lake of the Woods on a film shoot. Hell, this is like 6-7 years ago, and we had first got had a boat rigged up with a trolling motor, the bow mount, with that anchor feature. And that, blew our minds. You know,
right.
We're jigging for walleyes on 20-foot humps, and we didn't have to throw an anchor.
Right.
And you're drifting, yeah, you're not right exactly on the spot, but that was good. You drift, 15 feet off and bring it back, so you're not jigging the same. It was insane, because
right.
I just remembered having to throw anchors on those spots all the time and haul them up.
Terrible.
It was one of those things that just blows your mind, just
right.
A bunch of hicks from up here having that. It's like, whoa. That's awesome. And then talking about your boat wrap, I always said that you've got probably, well, for sure, on one of the coolest boats or looking boats on the NWT. I always said that you and Chase had the two coolest looking boats.
Sure.
But yeah, that's badass looking graphics on that thing that those guys do for you.
Yeah, it turned out pretty nice. Yeah, it looks really sweet. And yeah, I'm gonna be with them again next year, so we're gonna have another bolt collector wrap, and we're gonna tweak it just a little bit. Don't change it too much, but a few tweaks. Yeah, so yeah, I get a lot of looks going down the highway with that. A lot of thumbs up, and it's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, because it's like, it's a dark, or like a black, for the most part, and it's almost evil looking. Like, you should wear like a Darth Vader mask when you're going out, or something like that would fit.
I don't know if I'm going to do that, Sloan, but...
All right, well, maybe Kylo Ren or that new Darth Vader they got.
There you go.
You know,
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, that's great. So you can... Where was that?
I said, hook me up with that, would you?
Yeah, I can... my nephew had one for Halloween. I'll steal it from him. We can hook you up with that. Oh, that would be great. There you go. And I'll send you an invoice if you use that. But yeah. So you get a chance to do any ice fishing in the winter, or are you pretty much all up?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I do. I mean, I get out. We got shows and seminars pretty much every weekend in the winter.
Right.
But during the week, you know, I'll get up north and do a little bluegill fishing. That's kind of what I like to do, bluegills and crappies and some perch. But just panfish and run around with a small ice auger and a little rod. Just jig them up, you know, and that's what I enjoy doing in the wintertime. Yep.
Well, if you get any weekdays, we get some weekdays open as well up here if you want to come chase some big pike with us. The invite's always there.
Sounds good.
That's good. All right. Well, hang on the line for a second. We're going to wrap this up here. I know Jason's got a lot to do tonight, so thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Episode 35 in the books, Jason Shakurit. This is a good one, folks. Listen up and listen again. You'll learn a lot. Thanks for listening. That's the way she goes, and I'll see you next week.